Good afternoon, and thank you for being here with me and Alfredo Brillenburg at the 7th edition of the Festival della Mente, which in this exceptional year marked by the pandemic trauma from which we have not emerged yet, has chosen to take up the challenge of these difficult times by putting the word free at the center, unfolding all its meaning, including the relationship between the city and dreams. A topic that we are delighted to explore in this section entitled The Ideal City. Cities, like dreams, are built of desires and fears, even if the thread of their discourse is secret. Their roots are absurd, their perspectives are misleading, and everything hides something else. So, with these words that I've just read and that are translated by me, Marco Polo begins the third part of Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino, in which the author, who then was a member of the French experimental group of writers, Ulipo, conceives a scheme based on 11 series of cities in relationship to some issues, such as memory, such as desires, such as signs and sights. The reason why I've started by quoting Invisible Cities is not just because, as we had, the word dream is very present in these lines, no, because it was one of the most important books in my education as an urban scholar, but because it was a key reference of the book that we are presenting here today, entitled Atlante delle città, nove ritratti urbani per un viaggio planetario, that we have here. Published this year by Fondazione Feltrinelli. And Alfredo Brillenburg, an international award-winning architect and founder of the UTT, the urban think tank, investigating since years and with, I would say, a quite pioneering and interdisciplinary approach, marginal and informal neighborhoods all over the world, is one of the author. And the starting point of the book, as well as of the previous initiatives from which it derives, is a quite strong thesis that in the century, in the urban century, as it was called, or in the century of planetary urbanization, we are not only facing the simple urbanization of a rural population, but the colonization of the urban, of urbanity to the entire planet, as a result of the development process of the capitalist economy, in which a minority plunders limited resources, be they economical, spatial, and environmental, to the detriment of a majority forced to live in the urban suburbs all over the world. So in order to try to define, even before then solving this problem concerning cities, the city today, it's important to compare the issues that different cities present all over the world through a not only sectoral, but interdisciplinary key and a phenomenological perspective that is close to the direct bottom-up experience of those who live cities, who live in cities, and not only design them. What does cities like Caracas and cities from the south of the world, the so-called global south, teach us today in terms of everyday life, in terms of disparities, but also in terms of concrete practices and possibility to reimagine different urban futures?
Well, that's a loaded question. Thank you, Paola. That's a wonderful introduction. And I thank everyone for this wonderful chance to explain a bit about my work and my writing in Caracas and about what I've tried to contribute to your wonderful book, The Atlante de la Città. No? And well, I'm deeply concerned about two specific population groups, those living in emergency situations, homeless, and those living in outside of the norm of the formal city, and what we call informal settlements. Because they're facing job loss faster than anyone else. And as David Harvey, they don't have the true right to the city. The poor are more and more in the middle class being pushed out from what we call the city. Now, we cannot have a poor city and a rich city. We cannot have a center of a city and then a periphery. It all has to be one city and it has to be inclusive. So we find that infrastructure is lacking in certain places, whereas abundance of infrastructure is in the center of certain capital cities like Paris, in New York, but on the periphery, the Bronx and, you know, Brooklyn, it's not existing. So, and this concern, it's a slow introduction, but this concern has led us to really abort the topic of what a city is. But today, in this COVID situation, we see that more than 1.8 billion people worldwide are living homeless and in grossly inadequate housing. 1.8 billion. So this is a huge number. And it's nothing new that it's been rising. These are figures from the 18th of March of the UN in Geneva 2020. So it makes me want to dream. What is the utopia? What is that thing that John Lennon talked about in his Imagine song? No, let's imagine a world with no borders, no boundaries, no religions, one unified, we can live all together in peace. Because that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing a world much more in conflict, seeing a world much more unequal. Just to be sure, we're seeing a richer world, which economists love to say is that the planet's never been more rich and more abundant and have more access to health. It's true, but there is more, let's say, wealth. Right? The numbers are bigger. However, there's a trend in the last years of increasing disparity and separation between or gap between the rich and the poor. So having said that, I want to just return back for a second to the article that we wrote. And let me ask the audience to dream a little bit about a city that could be Caracas, or like Calvino says, it could be any city. Think of a city 1,000 meters above sea level in a 20 kilometer wide valley, a metropolitan area, 800 square kilometers of dense built urban fabric, with a regional population of 6 million people in a country where more than 3.3 million people, approximately 10% of the population, have left the country. They've left. And because in this maximum density of inhabitants per square kilometer, there's an unequal distribution of infrastructure. And 50% of that city is informal. It's a casbah. It's a barrio. It's a favela, right? Where a community is spending over $1 billion per year on private security because crime is so high. And the population produces 4,000 tons of solid waste daily with no recycling plant. So imagine a settlement with permanent water storage, a territory with no common political base, consisting in 5 municipalities, 5 territories, 5 police forces, in a country where the inflation rate is 10,000,000%. So what do we think about that utopia? Well, I am trying to understand that utopia, and I believe it's important to understand that given the country, which is Venezuela, given the city, which is Caracas, which has been 20 years in an unspoken war, we have been working to figure out how we can create more level playing field for all. How do we bring infrastructure to the favelas? And this has been our work for years. Now, maybe to finalize your question, why is Caracas relevant to the rest of the world? Because it looks like the rest of the world will start to look like Caracas. Caracas will be everywhere. So how do we think of a city if we're more and more seeing cities in conflict and with inequality? So maybe we have to think about Blade Runner in the tropics. Paula, I don't know if that helped to tell you about Caracas.
So suddenly with the COVID crisis, the air of the city, which should make free according to the German motto, has become not only unbreathable, but oppressive, divisive, segregating as never before. We have all tried or experienced the same kind of segregation, although not all in the same way, since again, all those who lived in marginal conditions suffered enormously more. So the poor, the most vulnerable, the inhabitants of suburbs and slums who fell ill and died more. So the issue is that on one hand, we have this dystopian scenario, which is likely to be more and more common in future, and which is burdened by unsolved problems on a planetary level, which are the same that we already knew and that are somehow listed in the book. So the growth of megacities, increasingly unequal distribution of wealth, climate change, economic crisis, and also with this pandemic emergency, finally the depiction of the break between the relationship with space and the relationship with the planet. And on the other hand, we are facing a kind of underground continuity of some great themes of the 19th century utopias, which are still extremely alive and speaking in the contemporary cultural debate. I'm referring to the idea of machines that can save the city, which is somehow present in the smart cities utopia, or the movement around the commons in general, which dates back to the 19th and 18th century. So the movement of common goods in general. So there are different Scotland utopias, and apparently we are still in search for the one that can set us free and can make cities again places where to become free, free and where the urban is not a nightmare, but a dream. So my question for you, Alfred, again, is what do we need to do as planners, as architects, but also as citizens to recover our right to the city, as our right to the utopia of city as a fair and equal place?
Well, you referred to several things that are very interesting. One is the language of the architect is no longer understandable. So we can't even understand each other. Least can a mayor or a common citizen understand what the planner and the architect are talking about. So that's very important. And then your other comment about the different kinds of utopias, the hot and the cold, the moment where the hot is when utopias have been very much in vogue and accepted from Thomas More's utopia to Super Studio in the 1960s. And but I'd like to refer there back to someone from the 60s, but who just died recently. And he had a very profound thing to say. And he grew up in the generation of utopias, which was Jonah Friedman. But Jonah Friedman twisted his idea of utopia to say utopia now, realizable utopia. In other words, we can all work, as you well laid out, we can all work collectively together to realize the utopia or the city we want by ourselves. So this is where it's fascinating to look at the periphery, the informal city, because you see lots of uniformity in the fabric, in the building materials, in the way people live it. And it's quite beautiful, like medieval cities, right? And they're ancient. And then you start to look at the kasbahs of 5,000 years ago in Fez. And then you start to realize, when did cities go wrong? Because we built cities since 5,000 years, since the Greeks, organically. There were two moments when the Romans and the Greeks laid down a grid in Militos, of course, for the first time as a utopia. The grid has served as a wonderful instrument. But then the Romans expanded this use of the grid as a military strategy of camps, right, and division. So, curiously, that Roman inheritance, the Spanish in the 16th century brought the quadricula with the leyes de Indias, or the laws of the Indies. The Indies being the new Spanish territory in South America. So Caracas, Lima, Bogota, all those cities were formed, Ecuador, Quito, were formed based on the utopia of the laws of Indies, which was the grid laid down as a castrum. Now, but what we have today is an organic clash between barrios, favelas, with the formal commercial city, if you want, that is a model borrowed from the 20th century by American, let's say, a free market economy. Right. And the grid America adopted, New York being the ultimate utopia of that American dream, because you could tax it, you could control it, you could reap all the benefits of real estate out of it. So again, we go back to South America again, where the one of the utopias was laid out in the 16th century. And we look at it and we see that in the 1950s, another utopia was laid on top of it, which was the modernist utopia. Modern architecture couldn't be built in North America or in France. So they went to their colonies. They went to the periphery. So in Brazil, modern architecture was built, Niemeyer, of course, for the car. The car seemed to be the modernist city. And we've seen what a failure that is now. So we keep trying to rationalize the city when people know very much how to live in the city. Therefore, I return to the cities radically developing today, which is the modern and ancient utopia built by the people of the favelas, is actually a radical idea of returning to the commons, to a built city that has very little laws and a lot of freedom for the individual to build his own city.
We can say that it's a city where space is left for life happening, yeah, for life to happen.
And see, cities are not only the built construction, but cities are about people. Architecture is not about buildings. Buildings are a consequence of it, but architecture is actually about people, where they can have life, where people can live. Of course, the home is the individual module with which we aggregate to create city. But the built construction is not city. It's about community building and economy building and job building and welfare for all.
Yeah, that's exactly one of the points of the book, of the Atlas. And it calls us to recall a sort of individual responsibility as not just urban dwelling, but citizens. And it has to do, again, with the language that we have to share to create this common dream that has to become reality. Yeah.
So utopia has resurfaced in two ways in the 21st century. One as in the new millennium, one as a techno optimism exemplified by smart city movement and exemplified by Dubai and by certain hubs around the globe, which are completely controlled by corporations, Apple, Google, City, Alphabet City. That will be the future of this techno optimism. And there will be the majority of the world that will be living in a kind of dystopia of kind of aggregated, self-built city.
So paradoxically, we can say that maybe the utopia we should wish for cities is a more human city in the end.
Yes, but it's a more hybrid city. It's more dirty. It's a little bit dirty philosophy or dirty urbanism. It's about what Okwie and Nauzer, who was an influential Nigerian curator, he forged this new idea of coming from Nigeria, but curating and being the chief curator in Berlin and later in Munich. He was talking about enlarging the horizon of the world to understand these ebbs and flows of what he called world civilization, which is hybrid, but he called it creolization, based on the Caribbean Creole mix of Asia, Africa, North America, England, France, everything coming together, and Indians and local indigenous populations, which is the territory of Latin America, which is utopia, which is the future, hybrid cultures, which Canclini, the urban anthropologist, Argentinian, but living in Mexico, says, like Octavio Paz, that this is maybe the real utopia, which is the mixture, the cosmic race, the mixture of all races coming together, living in harmony, which we had in the old Arab world or Palestinian world or in Damascus. We had that 5,000 years ago with the Judeo-Christian, Muslim, all living together in complete harmony.
And the last point that I wanted to raise, according to what you said, is that this mixture and this exchange and this co-living between different populations should concern not only human population but also non-human population, because it's the only way we have to reconnect with the only planet that we have, that is the planet Earth, and to try to commute, to transform all the breaks between us and the planets in kind of bridges. And there is, I would say, a lot to do also in projectual terms and design terms for these, creating a new kind of alliance between the disciplines of design, architecture, urban planning, engineering, and maybe natural and social disciplines. And there is an open field that is important to cross and to walk on, and also to navigate for fairer cities, dreams of cities and citizenship. And I think that with this, I can conclude.
Unfortunately, we won't have that dream realized of the ecological integrated world, the Anthropocene, until we have leaders who understand it, until we have people who take the cause on. But while we leave mayors seeking votes and populism reigning around the globe, and we see that cities are dominated by real estate firms that have they're measured only on rentability and they're accountable only to a board of directors, we will never have this human city, and this human and non-human world cohabitating, right? So we need to be interested in the politics, the economic, to see how to change and attempt to evoke images. And that's where the architect comes in. We have a talent to visualize. So if we visualize or use documentary filmmaking, maybe, or animation or writing like your book, we can then evoke a sense of poetry which could convince, because we are touched emotionally to change our habits.
Definitely.
Yes.
Thank you, Alfredo. It was a pleasure to talk with you about the book and about city, the post-pandemic cities and urban dreams, etc. And thank you again to the Festival della Mente di Sarzano, who gave us this amazing opportunity. The others happened in open places and in open festival like the one in which we are presenting it at the moment, before becoming a physical book, quite thick, I would say. And I think that we still need to have this kind of open and public arena to exchange experiences, knowledge, skills, and to make up this common language to talk about urban issues that, given the way in which the world is today and is becoming, pertain more and more to our condition as human beings. So we look forward for physical opportunities to come together in person. But this was already a wonderful one to exchange ideas and to make a point around this, the city. Thank you.
Thank you.